While the 1960 World Series will forever be remembered for Bill Mazeroski's Game 7 bottom of the ninth home run to beat the heavily favored New York Yankees, the Pittsburgh Pirates' charge to a championship was forged by many, including that year's National League Most Valuable Player, Dick Groat. Four seasons later, Groat was again part of a magical World Series ride, this time with the St. Louis Cardinals. The end result was the same, a seven-game triumph over the Yankees. A 14-year career which featured more than 2,000 hits, a .286 lifetime average, a batting title, and five All-Star selections earned him notoriety on the diamond. But what distinguishes this former shortstop even further is his earlier accomplishments on the hardwood. Dick, let's begin with your basketball career, and a celebrated one it was. At Duke, a two-time All-American, you set an NCAA record with 839 points in 1952. You were the first player in Blue Devil history to have your number retired, then a member of the National Collegiate Basketball Hall of Fame, and would play one season with the Fort Wayne Pistons in the NBA. But ultimately, you chose baseball and to remain with the Pittsburgh Pirates after serving 2 years in the Army. What for you was the deciding factor in playing baseball over basketball?
Well, first of all, I signed a bonus contract with Mr. Rickey in 1952, and they spread the bonus over 5 years. So the first year, Mr. Rickey, I was going back to Duke, Mr. Rickey knew I had to go in the Army. So he let me do whatever I wanted to. I played with the Pistons. I loved every minute of it. I never had more fun in my life than I did playing with the Pistons. Came out of the service, and Mr. Rickey had no sense of humor of my going back into basketball. And looking back on my career in sports, the only disappointment I've ever had is I wasn't able to play another 2 or 3 years in the NBA along with baseball.
In your opinion, Dick, what skills on the basketball floor can be best applied to the baseball diamond?
Well, for one thing, I didn't have great speed. I never realized that until they started clocking me in college as a baseball player. So I say this jokingly, but it's almost true. I'm still looking for my fifth infield hit after 14 years of playing baseball.
The Pittsburgh Pirates, as you know, growing up in the area, struggled for most of the 1950s. Never finishing above 7th place from 1950 through 1957. But in 58, you finished 2nd in the National League and 4th the next year. Did you have a belief, and did the rest of your team kind of have the belief, that 1960 could be a pennant-winning season?
Sure. Starting in 58, we started to believe in ourselves. But what happens, remember, there was no such thing as a reserve clause. So we as a team grew up together. And Mazeroski and myself, Burden, Clemente, we all became better and more mature as Friend, Law, and Face became better pitchers. And we all grew up together.
And in growing up together, 1960 was obviously, as we said, National League pennant. You became the first Pirate to win Most Valuable Player since 1927, Honus Wagner, with the league-best .325 average. And the franchise won the National League for the first time since that same 1927 season. But you broke your wrist early in September after being hit by a pitch and subsequently missed a few weeks. And at that time, the team had a comfortable lead. I think it was 5, 6 or 7 games in the National League race. What amount of uncertainty did you have about being a strong contributor to a potential World Series?
Well, first of all, having grown up in the city of Pittsburgh, I was not about to miss the World Series in Pittsburgh for the first time in 30-some years. I fought the team position every single night just to take the task off and check. I told him I healed quickly. He wouldn't believe it, but he did finally concede to go in the hospital, take the cast off, and he couldn't believe it himself that it was healed. So at least I had the opportunity to get in the whirlpool and loosen those muscles up that had been in a cast for 7, 8 days.
And you did come back for the World Series against the New York Yankees, a team that had won 6 titles and 8 pennants during the 1950s. Did you and your team embrace being the heavy underdogs in that series?
We were a team. team of destiny in 1960. I mean, we came from behind 30 or 40 times from the seventh inning on. And we got to the point where we didn't think we were supposed to lose ever. And that included against the great New York Yankee team, which it was in 1960, a marvelous baseball team.
This is Pittsburgh, where the Allegheny and Monongahela Rivers join to form the Golden Triangle. Pittsburgh, famed for its steel mills and the shimmering glow of its blast furnaces. Pittsburgh, that in 1960 gained new distinction, for the Pirates won their first pennant in 33 years. And they faced the same World Series foe they encountered back in 1927, the fabled New York Yankees.
As a member of the National League for your whole career, what was it like stepping foot, playing in the originally structured Yankee Stadium? You would do that in both in 60 and 64 with the Cardinals, and we'll get to the Cardinals later. But that first time, 1960, what was it like playing in Yankee Stadium?
Well, it was kind of special, but New York is something special to me. I practiced there for 2 weeks when I played the Hearst All-Star game at Yankee Stadium, and the game itself was always played in the Polo Grounds. So New York City is something special to me. I wasn't that crazy about playing in Yankee Stadium because the weather was just gorgeous in both World Series, and they had people sitting on center field, and it was very difficult picking the ball up.
The World Series, the 1960 World Series itself, was one of the most unusual in terms of game results, not to mention one of the most remembered. The Yankees would outscore the Pirates 46-17 through the first six games, with victories of 16-3, 12-0, and 10-0. Pittsburgh won with scores of 6-4, 3-2, and 5-2. Was it demoralizing to lose games by those large scores, or would it have been more of a negative effect had those losses been closer?
Absolutely not. Think about it. No second guessing whatsoever would you be beat that badly. We come into the locker room, and all we talked about was how far a man will hit the ball over the iron gate in the second game, and we got beat 16-3. There's no, if you'd have gotten a base hit, if I'd have caught that ball, if we'd have turned that double play. There was none of that. And the game was over, we were home, and got up the next day to play. And we were the kind of team that won every game we had a chance to win. Mr. Rickey always taught us when we were kids growing up, don't get carried away with all those one-run losses. Great teams win the close games. That's exactly what happened with the 60 team.
Dick Groat, an excellent right field hitter, proves it again when he deftly punches an outside pitch into the opposite field for a double. Burden trots home with a tying run.
And that continued to the seventh game at Forbes Field. It didn't lack for excitement in any bit, and that was even the case even before the famous ending. New York had a 7-4 lead heading into the eighth inning, but the first two men in the bottom half reached base, including the infamous ground ball to Tony Kubek that took a bad hop and hit him in the throat. But then with two on and none out, you got a single off Bobby Shantz to drive in a run. Roberto Clemente got a two-out infield single to make it 7-6. And then a catcher, Hal Smith, connected on a three-run homer to put the Pirates on top 9-7. That home run might have been the most forgotten World Series home run because of what happened the next inning. But, and you know as well as anyone, that was a tremendous moment considering the circumstances.
Sure was. That is the biggest forgotten home run in the history of the game.
And the 2-2 to Smith. He swings a long fly ball deep to left field. I don't know. It might go out of here. It is going, going, going. Forbes Field is at this moment an outdoor insane asylum. We have seen and shared in one of baseball's great moments.
But again, the Pirates made all the ABC plays. What people don't remember about that, nor a second guess are winning, they did not cover first base on Clemente's ground ball, or Hal Smith would have never had a chance to hit the home run.
Now the Yankees would rally in the top of the ninth with two runs of their own. How much confidence was lost when they eventually came back and tied it up 9-9?
do. I assumed we were going to get the chance to win it again before Mazeroski hit the home run. But it was the biggest home run, obviously, in my career just watching it.
Here's a ball one, too high now to Mazeroski. Well, a little while ago when we mentioned that this one, in typical fashion, was going right to the wire, little did we know. Here's a swing and a high fly ball going deep to left. This may do it. Back to the wall goes Vera. It is over the fence, home run, the Pirates win. Ladies and gentlemen, Mazeroski has hit a 1-0 pitch over the left field fence at Forbes Field to win the 1960 World Series for the Pittsburgh Pirates by a score of 10-9.
It marked the first time that a home run ended a World Series. Recall as much as you can. I know you said you said your helmet was on. You were the fourth man up. Recall as much as you can who you were next to in the dugout, the moment the ball was hit, the commotion on the field, and so forth, the celebration afterwards. What do you remember most?
I have no idea who was next to me. When you're standing in the dugout, you're just about field level. And all I know is when the Mavs hit the ball, everybody in the dugout kept saying, get off the wall, get off the wall. Had no idea it would carry that far. And if you see films of that, you'll see Mazeroski making the turn at first base, trying to make sure he got extra bases. He was running as hard as he could run. So Bill wasn't sure what was going on either.
Now, is that left field wall, I remember visiting the University of Pittsburgh a while ago, is that left field wall still at the University of Pittsburgh campus?
No, the center field wall is.
Oh, okay.
The 456, where they used to have the batting cage. Left center is gone.
Now, certainly Bill Mazeroski will forever be known for that one swing of the bat, but he got to the Hall of Fame because he was arguably the best fielding second baseman ever with 8 gold gloves. What made Mazeroski such a great fielder, in your opinion?
Well, first of all, people overlooked the fact that he had great feet, along with great hands and the quickness of his hands. Billy was just untouchable at second base. I can't imagine anyone playing second base the way he did. And Bill and I are still very good friends. And I was telling him the other day, looking back, of course, I'm 84 now. I cannot remember Mazzy ever giving me a bad throw at second base on a double play. Always gave it to me where I could get the ball, get rid of it, and not get killed at second base.
And it should be noted that you were a great fielder yourself, and with you at shortstop, the two of you led the National League in double plays 5 times. But you were traded from the Pirates to the St. Louis Cardinals in 1962 in exchange for pitcher Don Cardwell. How much did that hurt you, leaving your hometown team?
Very much so. I was heartbroken that whole winter. But it worked out to be fantastic for me because I ended up hitting in front of Stan Musial the entire season. And 1963 was physically and numbers-wise the greatest year I ever had. I finished second in the MVP voting to Sandy Koufax that year.
And with a .319 batting average, if I recall. And then in 1964, the Cardinals would overcome a tremendous deficit in the standings to overtake the collapsing Philadelphia Phillies on the final day of the regular season for the National League pennant. Winning in that fashion, winning when you probably weren't supposed to, did that loosen the team up going into the World Series once again against the Yankees?
I didn't have a great World Series, but I know I enjoyed playing for the Cardinals, very proud to be a member of that 64 team. And that was another team that came from behind. Ken Boyer hitting a grand slam home run. And the fourth game was a very, very key hit in the entire series.
How much of a veteran, how much importance was it for you to have like kind of a veteran presence being in a World Series before? Just thinking about it, I'm assuming most of those Cardinals, since they hadn't been in a World Series since 1946, probably hadn't experienced the World Series.
Well, there were, I'm telling you, they had some great young kids. Mark Shannon came out of the minor leagues in their organization. Tim McCarver became a great, great competitor, great hitter. That was a good young club. led that pitching staff with Bob Gibson, mm-hmm. who was just a joy to play behind and one of the greatest competitors I've ever known.
And the famous, or infamous, if you're a Chicago Cubs fan, Lou Brock trade in the middle of the season, that helps incredibly.
Lou Brock really did a magnificent job and proved to be just exactly what he turned out to be, a Hall of Famer.
And you mentioned Bob Gibson, and he would wind up winning Game 7 with a complete game against the Yankees to give the Cardinals their first title since 46. But I read in the third inning of Game 4, you pulled off a hidden ball trick on Mickey Mantle. Is that true?
That's an absolute figment of somebody's imagination. It's a complete lie. I've answered that in fan letters over and over again. Where it started, where it came from, I'll never know. But it's a complete lie. They brought Roger Craig in from the bullpen when the Yankees had three runs in, men on first and second, in the first inning of the ballgame. Before Roger threw a pitch home, he took a stretch, and Mickey and I were talking, and I told him a kind of a story about the home run he hit the day before, and I could tell he was still chuckling when he walked off second base, and Roger Craig gets all the credit for that because he gave me a magnificent throw at second base, and Mickey was out of mile, and he never forgot me for it. He even wrote about it in his book, mm-hmm. that I told him a funny story and then picked him off second base, and we went on. Roger shut the Yankees out for five innings, and Ron Taylor came in for the final four. It was just a marvelous pitching performance by both of them.
And now your career ended in 1967 with the Phillies and then the Giants. And 12 years later, you wanted to become an analyst for men's basketball at the University of Pittsburgh, a position you still hold. Did you have any offers to do baseball broadcasting?
No, not particularly. I did a couple Cardinal games, but that was it. Basketball has always been my first love.
And I'm here with Dick Rhoad. We're looking forward to another great season for the Panthers.
Thank you, Jim. I'm very happy to start the basketball season. You know how much I love basketball. And what I saw last Friday night, as quick as this Panther team is, they're going to be fun this year.
Yes, sir.
I think for anyone who is past being a typical college-age student, being involved in the college game and being surrounded by an atmosphere, whether it's Cameron Indoor Stadium and for you on a more frequent basis at the Peterson Event Center, must invigorate you and make you kind of feel young at heart in that environment.
Oh, I love being at Peterson Event Center. And, of course, it's been a joy since Jamie Dixon took over as head coach. I love Jamie. He's one of the finest coaches in all of college basketball, and it's been a joy the 12 years he's been here. He's averaged 25 wins a season. That is remarkable. And it's been fun, just the type of basketball Jamie plays, what he believes in. You play great defense, you rebound, and even when you have a poor shooting night, you have a chance to win.
Well, Dick, we wish you continued success in the broadcast booth with Pittsburgh. Many more years broadcasting those games. We really enjoy listening to you, and we enjoy having you on the program.
Well, thank you. It's been a joy being with you, and I appreciate you inviting me on your show. Thank you.